Our reading today is a poem by Rumi and translated by Coleman Barks. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house free of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. They may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. The summer before I entered second grade, my family moved to southern Indiana, to a suburban neighborhood with old trees and a park next door. I loved to explore the woods and the creeks and play with the neighborhood children. But when I think about that time, I think about the sweet gum tree in the side yard. It was a perfect climbing tree that had not only well-spaced branches, but nice outward-reaching branches that were perfect for sitting on, leaning against the trunk, legs dangling. I remember that that is where I went to be quiet. In my vibrant family of seven, it was sometimes hard to find a quiet place to myself. My leafy, green, solid, strong, tall friend became my sanctuary, where I could go and carefully unwrap the feelings that swirled in my child's heart and take time to be with them, feelings that were just simply part of being alive. There was some natural wisdom of childhood that prompted me to find solitude and see what was happening inside. I needed that tree and that time to myself and was nourished by it. As I grew up, I spent less time in my sweet gum and became enculturated to try to avoid my feelings. Instead of carefully investigating and gently looking at my feelings, I began to ignore them, especially the uncomfortable ones, and pretend they didn't exist and push them down underground. As I got older, these underground feelings would come up as harshness toward myself and others, anxiety that played out in unfortunate ways, passive-aggressive behavior toward my loved ones, which resulted in my own feelings of shame, guilt, and blame. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. In my late 30s, I found myself in the process of a divorce, single parenting, and both completely overwhelmed and surprisingly relieved. There were so many feelings I could not ignore or successfully bury. Instead of climbing a tree and paying attention, I went to the bookstore. Distraction appealed to me more than sitting with my pain, but there was wisdom to be found there. And the book that ended up in my hand that I could not put back on the shelf was titled, When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times. This book is now faded, dog-eared, and highlighted to within an inch of its life. But on that winter day in 1999, I had never heard of its author, Pema Chodron. It was through her simple, straightforward language that I was introduced to a new way of understanding suffering, a new way of relating to the world, to myself, to difficulty, and to joy. Pema Chodron found Buddhism as a way of dealing with the painful experience of her broken marriage. She followed the teachings deeply and became the first American in the Vajrayana tradition to become a fully ordained Buddhist nun. The following passage, both underlined and starred in my copy of her book, has been transformative to me and something I aspire to. She says, "Well, it starts with being willing to feel what we are going through. It starts with being willing to feel what we are going through. It starts with being willing to have a compassionate relationship with the parts of ourselves we feel are not worthy of existing on the planet. If we are willing to be mindful not only of what pain feels like, if we even aspire to stay awake and open to what we are feeling, to recognize and acknowledge as best we can in each moment, then something begins to change. Being willing to have a compassionate relationship with the parts of ourselves that we feel are not worthy of existing on the planet." Those words really hit me. And I come back to Rumi, who says, "Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably." The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Why? Why invite in these unexpected, unwelcome guests, these feelings that we don't want? Because they are already here. They are already here, and they need to be acknowledged, listened to, and felt. This world needs people who are willing to be honest with themselves, who are not trying to hide their own experience from themselves. This is a deep act of kindness and friendship toward the self. We need people who are kind toward themselves. Compassion is the natural result of honesty and kindness that we extend to ourselves. And the world needs people who are compassionate and brave, courageous enough to feel our feelings and not run from our experience. This moment, this very moment where we do not want to feel the discomfort, the restlessness, the loneliness, the unexplainable sadness, this moment is where addictions are born. We reach for something to soothe us, to distract us, to fill us with a different thing. Alcohol, food, TV, surfing the internet. We need a world with more compassion and less addiction. They are intertwined. In Buddhist teacher Tara Brach's book, Radical Acceptance, she tells a story of Jacob. A meditator, a Buddhist, a man in his 70s, in the mid-stages of Alzheimer's. Jacob had often given talks about Buddhism and had accepted an invitation to address a gathering of over 100 meditation students. He arrived at the event feeling alert and eager to share the teachings he loved. Taking his seat in front of the hall, Jacob looked out at the expectant faces before him, and suddenly he didn't know what he was supposed to do or say. He didn't know why he was there. All he knew was that his heart was pounding and his mind was spinning. Putting his palms together at his chest, Jacob started naming out loud what was happening to him. Afraid, embarrassed, confused, feeling like I am failing, powerless, shaking, sense of dying, sinking, lost. For several more minutes, he sat, head slightly bowed, continuing to name his experience. As his body began to relax and his mind grew calmer, he also noted that aloud. At last, Jacob lifted his head, looked slowly at those gathered, and apologized. Many of his students were in tears. One said, "No one has ever taught us like that before. Your presence was the deepest teaching." Rather than pushing away his experience and deepening his agitation, Jacob had the courage and training simply to name what he was aware of, and most significantly, to bow to his experience. Jacob did not create an adversary out of his feelings of fear and confusion. He didn't make anything wrong. He didn't make himself a victim. Jacob treated each uninvited guest honorably, met them at the door laughing by being loving and kind to himself and his experience. This Buddhist theology that grounds me reminds me to be present with what is, to feel my feelings, and to develop a grateful and compassionate heart. During my semester working as a chaplain in a San Francisco hospital, I fell back on my old habits of trying to avoid all my feelings. It was not good. Working daily with people immersed in suffering, pain, and death, I too had a lot of feelings. Ignoring the feelings wasn't working, so in the spirit of Rumi, I finally decided to try welcoming them in. It went something like this. It seemed like there was a group of hooligans outside my door, slouched and dirty, smoking cigarettes and crushing the butts into my lawn. I opened the door to find the spokesperson was Doubt. "Doubt, I see that you've brought some companions along. There's fear and confusion, self-doubt, sorrow, loneliness, sadness, and several dozen other feelings of loneliness. I really don't have room for all of you here," I said. "Oh, you are tired and you need a place to rest? Oh, you are hungry? Well, I do have some soup. Come in, relax on these soft chairs, put down your bundles, take off your coats. I'll bring you cool water to drink and hot soup. There's plenty for all. Let me put on beautiful music and build a fire in the fireplace. Please, be welcome. You look tired. Rest here." After they have eaten, I collect the empty bowls and spoons, and I make homemade cookies that smell delicious. I boil water and set out pots of tea and chocolate chip cookies. I go and do laundry, washing their dirty clothes. While they rest, I listen to quiet music, wash the dishes, and sing to God. Because even though I have found a way recently not to feel God's infinite love, I know she is here in my heart as I care for my unwelcome guests. I think of the wise and beautiful, also the wounded and unreliable friends and teachers she has given me, and the place in which to host them, and the ability to find kindness when I don't think I have any, for them or for God or for me. But somehow some grace shows up in the dirty faces of my fears, my unexpected visitors, as I welcome them in and offer them hospitality. And this part came later in my thoughts. I have to remember to rouse them from their slumbers, satiated and rested, and let them know that I am ready for them to go, Just because I welcome them and see them and listen to them doesn't mean I want them to take up permanent residence. I got to wondering if I can have curiosity about my experiences, if I can remember that all things are impermanent and that too will pass. Can I and we notice what is happening inside and not reach for something to soften its roughness? Can we invite our spirit into expansion when what we really want to do is contract and struggle against what is? Can we, through this work of paying attention, develop compassion for ourselves and others? Can we look our own monsters in their scary eyes and offer love? Can we connect with our innate wisdom and find our own version of a sweet gum tree and sit with what is? May we carry these questions inside our hearts and be gentle with us when the answer is no. And show up again next time with the possibility of yes. Let us end with a prayer. Dear God, I get so confused sometimes, and I mix you up with a parent who fixes everything and makes it so everything is the way I want it. I sometimes think you have gone or have never been. And because my guests are so noisy and loud and whiny, I often don't notice you over there chopping veggies and cleaning off the kitchen table, humming a tune and emptying the garbage. I forget that you are love and constant and in all beings and places, and that love is there alongside the doubt and the fear and the loneliness. I sometimes build up walls to try to keep out the pain and suffering of this world. But you help me remember that love breaks down the walls, transforms us, clears us out for some new delight, and connects us to each other. Thank you. Amen.